Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Saturday, October 16th. I'm your reader, Jim Hill. Well, first let's have a look at the weather for eastern Iowa. Today, in the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City area, it will be sunny, the wind from the northwest at 15 to 25 miles per hour. We'll have a high of 62 and a low of 38. Tomorrow, Sunday, it'll be sunny, the wind from the west at 5 to 15 miles per hour. We'll have a high of 70 and a low of 43. And on Monday, sunny again, wind from the south at 5 to 15 miles per hour. A high of 74, a low of 48. On Tuesday, it'll be mostly sunny, the wind from the northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. We'll have a high of 73 and a low of 51. The normal high for this day is 64, the normal low, 42. The record high was 87 in 1950. The record low was 25 in 2002. The sun will set tonight at 6:24. It will rise tomorrow at 7:21. We have a little weather story today, this one from meteorologist Joe Winters. Beyond the weather. In recent days, we have seen dew points dropping into the 30s and 40s across East Iowa. While this gives us some super fall weather, it also brings with it a clear sky. These clear skies at night give us great chances for beyond the weather views. This weekend, after dusk, look to the south-southwestern sky. The moon will be very easy to find. Near the moon will be two very bright objects. The brightest is the planet Jupiter, while the fainter one is the planet Saturn. Deneb, Altair, and Vega are stars that make up the summer triangle. This time of the year, just below this formation, is a faint but fun constellation. Delphinius, the dolphin. Happy stargazing. And again, this little weather story is from meteorologist Joe Winters. Now, I'll turn to the front page of the Gazette for today's first story. Long way to go on broadband goal. $200 million in federal pandemic aid directed toward Iowa grants. And this story is by Rod Beauchart of the Gazette. The latest surge of government aid to expand broadband access in Iowa is much needed, industry experts say, but the goal of universal coverage by 2025 remains formidable, with the most challenging underserved or unserved areas in the state yet to enjoy high-speed internet connections. Participants in the Gazette's annual Iowa Ideas Conference this week said a new round of $200 million in federal American Rescue Plan Act funding being offered to Iowa providers comes as cities, counties, and state officials decide how to use more than $1.5 billion in infrastructure money that also can be applied to capital-intensive broadband projects. Quote, "It's a great start, but there's still a long way to go," said Chris Hopp, general manager of Elkader-based Alpine Communications, which serves Clayton and Fayette counties. He was on an Iowa Ideas panel that included Dave Duncan, Chief Operating Officer for the Iowa Communication Alliance, Kent Van Meter, Vice President of Client
Let me read that sentence again, and then we'll pick it up. He was on an Iowa Ideas panel that included Dave Duncan, Chief Operating Officer of the Iowa Communication Alliance, Kent Van Meter, Vice President of Client Services for Fiber Utilities Group, which, among other things, manages the state audio video. The state's audio video Iowa Communications Network, and Kevin Cabbage, General Manager and Chief Executive Officer of the Farmers Mutual Telephone Company, based in Stanton. Quote, "It most definitely is not enough to solve this problem, but it's a great start," agreed Cabbage. "There's been a tremendous amount of money awarded. Unfortunately, we've only just begun." Duncan, whose trade association represents about 115 locally owned and operated broadband providers across the state, said the state previously awarded nearly $100 million in grants in September, but had applications for about $300 million in projects costs, many in targeted tiered service areas totaling nearly 86,000 locations across about 15,000 square miles in the hardest-to-serve places in Iowa. Quote, "So we're talking about lots and lots of Iowans who still don't have access to future-proof broadband," Duncan said. "Most of the Iowans who were cheapest and easiest to hook up to broadband have been. So we have left the most expensive people in the most sparsely populated areas, in the rocky areas, in the hilly areas, etc. And it's going to cost a lot of money to make sure that we treat everybody equally and give them access to the greatest internet," he added. Cabbage noted that in his four-county area in rural southwest Iowa, it costs about $35,000 per mile for a fiber optics installation. Yet there might be only two houses on that one-mile stretch. So the cost per household is significant, and government grant or loan money usually doesn't fully cover the expense. Quote, "We want people to have top-notch services, but it does come at a cost, especially in rural areas, to build and maintain these types of networks that everybody so desperately needs right now," he noted, "especially to build future-proof capacity of 100 megabits per second download and upload speeds that can handle ongoing technology upgrades." Governor Kim Reynolds, who set a goal of connecting all of Iowa to affordable high-speed broadband by 2025, said she continues to hear from Iowans that they still lack access to the broadband's speeds necessary to start a business, telework, or connect with a healthcare provider. During an Iowa Ideas appearance this week, Reynolds said the state already has about 200 potential applicants expressing interest in the latest round of grant money being released, with the program already providing about $175 million in assistance that has resulted in $357 million in investment. quote, "There's a lot of interest there and a lot of need," said Reynolds, who wants to see Iowa become the most connected state in the nation as a tool that can be marketed. To that end, she called for allocating $450 million in funding for broadband to hit that 2025 target. Quote, "We're going to be pretty close to that by the time we get done," she said during an Iowa Ideas interview. "We've been aggressive on trying to get the money out there because we know that it's important to try to get ahead of the supply chain issue that we're experiencing out there as well." Okay. All right. We have this story also from the front page of today's Gazette. First, let me find the second part of the story so I don't have to keep you waiting. All right, here we go. Interest grows in forming North Liberty Medical Hub. proposed surgery center now ponders partnering with hospital system. And this story is by Vanessa Miller of the Gazette. The state's consideration of a proposed ambulatory surgery center near where the University of Iowa already is building a $395 million hospital has been bumped from this month to February after a hospital system approached Steindler Orthopedic Clinic about a potential collaboration at what's shaping up to become a bustling new medical hub in growing North Liberty. On Wednesday, when the Gazette published an article about Steindler North Liberty Ambulatory Surgery Center seeking approval from the State Health Facilities Council, a hospital system not yet publicly identified approached the center requesting it consider a proposal to build an inpatient hospital that could anchor the Steindler development. That vision would include an orthopedic specialty hospital, according to Patrick Magalenes, president and chief executive officer of Steindler Orthopedic Clinic in Iowa City. And it could fully transform the long vacant swath of land just off Interstate 380 at Forever Green Road. Because an orthopedic specialty hospital would incorporate outpatient surgery, Magalenes told the Gazette the change would affect the application for an ambulatory surgery center, at least as currently contemplated in size. Needing time to cement the collaboration and reach an agreement, the project's applicant, Steindler surgeon Taylor Dennison, asked the state to pull his project from this month's agenda and move it to February. The state confirmed that change. Although Magalenes didn't share many details about the project's potential partner, he confirmed that, quote, we have a potential in-state partner. Mercy One, Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids, Unity Point Health Cedar Rapids, and Mercy Iowa City all strongly opposed the University of Iowa healthcare application to build a $230 million, 300,000-square-foot hospital facility on 60 nearby acres at the intersection of Forever Green Road and Highway 965. They accused the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, which has aired plans to use a significant portion of its new North Liberty beds for inpatient orthopedics, of veering into the community healthcare lane, threatening the existence of local providers and creating a healthcare monopoly in Iowa. UIHC pushed back, noting its need for more space to treat Iowa's sickest patients, including the rising numbers being transferred from community hospitals. And while the State Council denied UIHC's initial application, given the community provider concerns, it approved a revised application August 31st. Days after achieving that approval, UIHC revealed plans to build on the North Liberty site another 169,000 square feet of academic research and clinic space, which didn't require a state certificate like the new hospital did. That additional square footage bumped up the project's total cost to $395 million, more than the University of Iowa's recent $392.7 million Stead Family Children's Hospital. The university almost immediately began moving earth on the site, even as design work continues. A groundbreaking ceremony was held Thursday. An original application for the $17.9 million Steindler project on 36 acres adjacent to the UIHC project sought approval for only a 35,880 square foot ambulatory surgery center, But it also included in its master plan a vision of a new 71,000-square-foot orthopedic clinic, a 157,000-square-foot hospital, and a four-story hotel covering 95,000 square feet and 2.25 acres. Quote, what payers, patients, the community, and private physicians need, and what this certificate of need application represents, is a choice, according to the original application. That is competition. A choice will keep costs competitive, and that only happens if the choice includes a choice in modern facilities that are lower in cost. Quote, in their application, UIHC acknowledged healthcare delivered in an academic medical center costs more than the same care in a community hospital, according to the Steiner proposal. One way, perhaps the only way, to help control pricing and cost is to give a private physician development the opportunity to create pricing pressure. In discussing how a new Steiner facility would affect other providers in the area, including those that host Steiner surgeons like Mercy Iowa City, the application notes patients more often are opting for outpatient settings. Steiner also addressed head-on the anticipated argument that Mercy Hospital, Iowa City, is dependent upon Steiner Orthopedic Clinic surgeons, and the impact on Mercy Hospital, Iowa City, will be significant if Steiner Orthopedic Clinic surgeons are no longer doing outpatient orthopedic surgeries at the hospital. Although the application argues Steiner surgeons have been loyal providers for Mercy, it asserts that hospital today offers century-old infrastructure and is in a financial condition that severely restricts its ability to invest in repairs or new technology and is actively seeking a buyer or affiliation partner. Mercy Hospital, Iowa City, quote, Mercy Hospital, Iowa City is no longer cost-effective for payers and patients, efficient or appropriate for modern orthopedic outpatient procedures, according to the application. Quote, to be clear, Mercy Hospital, Iowa City, has been invited to participate in the development of the 36-acre site. Reportedly, it has met with a firm to conceptualize a presence on a partition of the 36 acres. Quote, whether Mercy Hospital, Iowa City, intends to participate remains to be seen. And with that, I will pause and have a sip of coffee. Pardon me. Let's find another story here. Let's see, what do we have? Well, there is this story on the Iowa Today page. Ely man sentenced to life. Matthew Robbins is the poster child for a life sentence, judge says. And the story is by Trish Mahaffey of the Gazette. Cedar Rapids. The family has waited over 7 agonizing years for Matthew Robbins to be punished for not only fatally shooting their beloved son, father and brother James, Jim, Bob, Buher, but also dismembering, burning, and disposing of his body, which was never found. Six of Buher's nine siblings and his mother gave heartbreaking, sometimes angry, victim impact statements Friday as they asked a federal judge to sentence Robbins, 49, of Ely, to the maximum of life in prison. U.S. District Chief Judge Leonard Strand sentenced Robbins to more than life in prison, even after giving him credit for time served in a separate firearms conviction from 2016. Buher's brothers, Dan and Rick Buher, in their statements said they didn't understand how anybody could chop someone up and burn him. Quote, "This was premeditated murder," Dan Buher said. Rick Buher said he, Jim Bob, and Robbins had worked together on Riverside Casino when it was built. They were in the same carpenters union. But he can never forgive Robbins. Quote, "I want you to rot in hell," Rick Buher said. "This tore my family to pieces. Jim was my best friend. I can't imagine what my brother went through." Penny Korporick, Buher's sister, in her statement agreed, saying her brother was killed in the most horrific way imaginable, and she wanted Robbins to die like him because wasting away behind bars wasn't good enough. Quote, well, this goes on at some length, so I'm going to just stop right there and move on to another story. All right. I'm on the Insight page of the Gazette, where we have first community letters, and today there are several letters, so let's get started. First letter is from Mary Lou Pazur of Marion. Strand brings unselfish service to Marion Council. Back a few years, when I decided not to seek another term on the Marion City Council, actually, my second retirement, I encouraged Randy Strand, I think that's the way you pronounce it, to seek the at-large seat. Why? Randy has views similar to mine on Marion, avoiding unnecessary spending, listening to the taxpayers, and using plain old common sense. I know that following the derecho, Randy was out there clearing streets and cutting branches, helping folks regain some semblance of order. All I did was make ice cubes. If he's elected to another term, he will continue his unselfish service in the city. I urge voters to help him with his reelection. And again, this letter is from Mary Lou Pazur of Marion. The next letter is from Suzanne Huffman of Marion. Vote Dale Monroe for Marion City Council. Before you are a leader, success is about growing yourself. When you become a leader, success is about growing others. This quotation epitomizes Dale Monroe's life journey. For him, leadership has been a personal pursuit that has led to encouraging others to succeed as well. As high school principal and as assistant superintendent in the Linmar School District, Dale was committed to the success of all students and teachers. During the 21 years I worked with him, he encouraged me to become a more proficient teacher. Dale was always rooting for me to do my best, and it made a difference in my career. Leadership, after all, is about making others better as a result of your presence. Today, he is recognized as a leader, proven not only by the civic honors he's received, but the community respect he's earned. He is currently a member of the Marion Planning and Zoning Commission, but other positions he has held were a membership on the YMCA Board of Directors, the Blue Zones Steering Committee, and the Board of Directors for the Marion Chamber of Commerce, to list a few. Dale is ready for a new leadership position, the at-large seat on the Marion City Council. He believes in Marion and will work collaboratively toward its improvement. I am proud to cast my vote on November 2nd for Dale Monroe. And again, that the author of that letter is Sue Ann Huffman of Marion. And the final letter is from Bonnie and Steve Sovereign of Cedar Rapids. Todd is dedicated to all Cedar Rapids neighborhoods. Dale Todd is a gem for this city. There are so many reasons to keep his perspective, drive, compassion, and can-do accomplishments on the City Council. We have seen Dale's unending contributions to the community since his coming to Cedar Rapids as a college student 40 years ago, choosing to stay and marrying the wonderful Sarah. Together, they were undying advocates for son Adam, as well as recognized state and national leaders for the interests of kids with disabilities. We know of no one whose love of community is more tangible through real accomplishments. Yet his kind of leadership is not easy. Taking tough votes invites political peril. His past support for keeping a grocery store in a challenged neighborhood and assuring gender discrimination was defined in city code cost him his council seat a few years back. However, like in all things, Dale just kept charging. Over the last 8 years, he is the one leader who deserves most credit for bringing together the biggest public-private partnership project in the history of Cedar Rapids. With $20 million from a supportive community, there will be accessible and free recreational amenities, a trail bridge, and an urban lake in the heart of our city, and within walking distance of 5,000 low to moderate income homes. This is simply consistent with Dale's dedication to all the neighborhoods of Cedar Rapids. Please vote to keep Dale working for us on the council. And again, that letter is from Bonnie and Steve Sovereign of Cedar Rapids. And now, also on the inside page, we have a letter from Bruce Lear, who is a who is from Sioux City, retired after 38 years of being connected to the public schools. And this guest column by Bruce Lear is called Selective Amnesia Virus is Surging. America is in the grip of yet another pandemic. No, not a new variant of COVID-19. With this virus, victims don't gasp for air, although they may leave those around them gasping for reality. Masks won't protect these victims, and the only vaccines are doses of common sense and honesty, with a booster of reliable medical science. I'm talking about a new and virulent strain of selective amnesia virus. To be fair, we all carry mild symptoms of this virus depending on the situation. For example, when a truly despicable person dies, the eulogy focuses only on the positive, and the bad stuff is forgotten, at least during the funeral. Those are the mild symptoms. But now there's a virulent strain of the virus surging through the Republican base, threatening to infect the entire country. 9 months after America watched its capital attacked by rampaging Trump insurrectionists seeking to overturn a fair election, Republican leaders want Americans to forget what they saw and move on. This variant of the selective amnesia virus is deadly, and it's mutated from the big lie about election fraud in the last election. But it's not about the last election. It's about the next one and all the elections to come. We can't have attempted coups and bogus audits after every election just because one party doesn't like the results. Those not afflicted with selective amnesia should remember the Benjamin Franklin warning of 1787. Quote, "You have a republic if you can keep it." It applies now. But January 6th isn't the only symptom. A few months ago, there were lines of people applauding doctors and nurses as tireless saviors. Now, thanks to a surge in selective amnesia, medical professionals are under attack simply because they offer advice that Americans should be required to wear a mask and get vaccinated. During the first COVID-19 surge, public schools, even though shuttered, were a lifeline for children by providing meals. Also, parents respected teachers. Also, parents respected teachers deeply as they struggled to teach their own children. But all that is forgotten now, as the same parents shout about why masks and vaccines should be required in schools. In Iowa, around this time of year, the scariest place should be a J.C. haunted house. But since the amnesia virus surge, the scariest place now is speaking at a school board meeting advocating a mask mandate. Iowa always has enjoyed nonpartisan and mostly non-controversial school board elections. In fact, unless there was a push to fire a superintendent or change school hours or some other hot-button issue, school board elections were about as exciting as folding socks on Saturday night. But I was infected, and school board elections in some communities now are angry partisan fights about masks and vaccines. So how do we stop the spread of the selective amnesia virus? First, we need to be vaccinated with some common sense. If it sounds absurd, it is. Remember, even on Gilligan's Island, they listen to the professor instead of the movie star or millionaire. Let's rid ourselves of the amnesia virus so we can return to the Iowa and America we've always remembered. And again, that guest column is by Bruce Lear of Sioux City. You're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Saturday, October 16th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now, let's turn to today's obituaries. All right. Well, first we have the short notices. From El Cater, Ivan Nell Grace Canelli Dinan, that's spelled D-I-N-A-N, 100, died Wednesday, October 13th. The Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of El Cater is managing the arrangements. From Guttenberg, Forrest Wayne Monroe, 90, formerly of Castalia, died Friday, October 15th. The Schmitz Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Ossian is handling the arrangements. From Marion, William E. Kettlecamp, M.D., 88, died Friday, October 15th. The Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Marion is handling the arrangements. From Newhall, Lisa Lay Michael, 65, died Tuesday, October 12th. The Phillips Funeral Home of Vinton is handling the arrangements. From Olwine, Leonard C. Fenner, Sr., 62, formerly of Jessup, died Wednesday, October 13th. The White Funeral Home of Jessup is managing the arrangements. From Monticello, Frederick James Eggeman, passed away. There's no date listed here. A celebration of life will occur on October 16th, which is today, at 2 p.m. at the Monticello Gun Club. The address of that is 15149 Hollywood Road in Monticello. From Palo, Ronald Keith Hopp, 77, of Cedar Rapids, passed away on Thursday, October 15th. No services are planned at this time. From Tipton, Wilbert, also known as Webb Henry Thoeming, that's spelled T-H-O-E-M-I-N-G, 97, of Tipton, passed away on Thursday, October 14th, at Mercy Hospital in Iowa City. On Sunday, October 17th, Fry Funeral Home will host a visitation from 2 to 4 p.m. On Monday, October 18th, the First United Church of Christ in Tipton will hold a funeral services at 11 a.m. and a one-hour luncheon at noon. Immediately following the luncheon, Webb will be laid to rest at the Massillon Cemetery. From Cedar Rapids, Eric Wolfgang von Stark, 57, died suddenly and unexpectedly on Saturday, September 18th, at his home in Cedar Rapids. There will be a visitation from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. Saturday, October 16th, at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Cedar Rapids. And finally, from Victor, George Robert, also known as Bob Decker, 90, of Victor, died on Wednesday, October 13th, at Windsor Manor in Grinnell. A public visitation will begin at noon, Sunday, October 17th, at the Smith Funeral Home in Victor, with the family present from 2 to 4 p.m. A graveside service with military honors is scheduled for 11 a.m. Monday, October 18th, at the Victor Memorial Cemetery. All right. Pardon me while I have a sip of coffee. Well, I'm looking at a... at the obituary page, and I see this extended tribute to the author Gary Paulsen, who passed away just recently. Now, Gary Paulsen was a beloved author of novels for young people, and I was a big fan. So I'll read just two paragraphs in this extended obituary. Author of beloved young adult novel Hatchet, dies at age 82. Gary Paulsen was an avid outdoorsman and a prolific writer, and this story first appeared in the Washington Post. Gary Paulsen, who inspired generations of young readers with novels about the beauty, wonder, and danger of the wilderness, most notably Hatchet, about a boy who learns to survive on his own in the Canadian bush. While drawing on his own adventures as a sled dog racer and restless outdoorsman, died Wednesday at his home in New Mexico. He was 82. His death was confirmed by Kathy Dunn, a publicist for Random House Children's Books, who did not say exactly where or how he died. Paulsen had lived on a 200-acre ranch in White Oaks, a former ghost town near the Jicarilla Mountains, and treasured his solitude, saying he could only think clearly when he was far from society. But even as he moved between New Mexico and Alaska, training sled dogs for the Iditarod, he received hundreds of letters a day, forwarded by his publisher from fans across the country. Like the works of Beverly Cleary or Judy Blume, his novels had a special hold for many young readers, including boys, who, like Paulsen, once had little interest in going to the library. Quote, if I have a kid who's a reluctant reader, all I have to do is hand him one of Gary Paulsen's books. Terry Lazane, an authority on young adult literature who taught at Sam Houston State University in Texas, told the New York Times in 2006, it'll change his life. And that's Gary Paulsen. Now, I'll turn to the sports page of the Gazette for a story. Here's one. High school football. Volker evolves into stalwart at West Delaware. Hawks respond to senior standouts' team-first attitude. And the story is by K.J. Pilcher of the Gazette. West Delaware's Wyatt Volker and Hawks head coach Doug Winkowicz recall the senior's first varsity start. Winkowicz chuckled slightly when he remembered pulling him at halftime. Volker admitted he only assisted on a tackle and was out of the game the second half in a 17-15 loss to Weilert. Certainly not the beginning to an all-state defensive career that might be expected. Volker said, quote, after that, I went on to be the team's leading tackler. I think I learned a lot from that game. But I think it is just about week after week getting better. Volker went to work and quickly caught on to the speed of the game, developing into a defensive dynamo and helping the Hawks ascend to third in the Class 3A rankings. West Delaware traveled to number 6 Independence to decide the District 3 title last night at Linebaugh Field. Pardon me, I search for the rest of the story. Volker will attempt to add to his total of 34.5 tackles, including 29 solo, 3 sacks, and 13 tackles for loss. The first is second most for the Hawks, and the rest are a team best. Volker said, quote, things have been good. We had to come together to win a couple tough games. I think we've been playing really well together as a team. The 2019 opener against Weilert proved to be more good than bad. Volker refocused his attention on getting better. He clung to coaches, learning on what needed to improve. He evolved quickly that season, posting a team high with 56.5 tackles with 37 solo, 14 tackles for loss, and 3 fumble recoveries. His 5.5 sacks ranked second. Winkowicz said, quote, ever since then, he watches film. He's learned the game. He's become incredibly instinctual. I think a lot of that has to do with his will to be the best. He's worked himself into a tremendous linebacker. Last season led to first-team All-State honors by the Iowa Print Sports Writers Association. He had 91 tackles with 75 solo, 4 sacks, 20 tackles for loss, pardon me, 5 fumble recoveries and 2 interceptions. Winkowicz has a hard time picking out career highlights. Winkowicz said, quote, I don't know if there is some particular moment. He's been special each night out, honestly. Volker seems to be perfectly wired for his roles. He is strong and athletic as a punishing running back and a terrorizing tackler. Volker has a nose for the ball and does not shy away from contact. Quote, I like sticking my nose in there, said Volker, who is a state champion and 3-time medalist, a Greco-Roman national champion and freestyle All-American wrestler. Quote, I'm not scared to get hit. I like playing physical football, and I think that is why we're so good. We get to the fourth quarter, and we're so physical, we can wear teams down with our pace. Winkiewicz also mentioned a visit with Volker before the playoffs last year. He was impressed by Volker entering his office, shutting the door, and telling him that he was okay with sharing carries with a sophomore call-up, if that was what helped the team. His selfless attitude is demonstrated by a willingness to play any position the team needs. Volker said, quote, "We are all after the same goal. We all want to win a state title. We all know what the end goal is, but we have to keep winning every game. Every week, we just try to get better and better. We try to make ourselves better and not worry about who we're playing." And with that, I will pause and have a sip of coffee. Okay. And now I will turn to the back page of the Gazette for the Dear Abby column. Husband resents wife's life outside of home. Dear Abby, I've been with my husband for 8 years, married for one. Before our marriage, it was just the two of us doing everything together. He has a strong distrust of people and doesn't have any friends. We moved to a bigger city where I found a better job and made new friends. I go out with him occasionally, but when I do, he is very rude and snide to me. When I ask him why he's mad if I go out with my friends, he says, it's always been me and you, no one else. We fight every time I go out. I am tired of all of it. Do you have advice for me? And this is signed, Sick of Explaining. Dear Sick, yes, recognize that you married an antisocial, deeply insecure, and verbally abusive man. He views any relationship you have with someone other than him as a threat, so he is punishing you for it. Also recognize that his anger and his need to control you will only escalate. You may be sick of explaining, but your husband is sick, period. I'm advising you to make a discreet call to the National Domestic Violence Hotline, because at some point you may need a safe escape plan. And that is the Dear Abby column for today. All right. Let's see what else we have in today's paper. Well, we have this story that appears on the living page of the Gazette. This story is called Blessing the Animals, What the Tradition of St. Francis of Assisi Means to Pet Owners. And this story is by Elijah Decius of the Gazette. Marion. With dogs on one side and cats on the other, only a pair of gerbils parted the small sea of pets gathered outside Lutheran Church of the Resurrection on Sunday. There, dog barks and cat meows were hushed as Pastor Jeff Froner led the congregation through the story of St. Francis of Assisi, the patron saint of animals and ecology. Along with a prayer and a personal blessing with a sprinkle of water on each pet gathered. Let me read that so it comes out right. There, dog barks and cat meows were hushed as Pastor Jeff Froner led the congregation through the story of St. Francis of Assisi, the patron saint of animals and ecology, along with a prayer and a personal blessing with a sprinkle of water on each pet gathered. Though it was Froner's first time blessing the animals in Marion, it's not his first time at the rodeo. Experience has taught him to use an evergreen branch to sprinkle water as a precaution for his hands in the unlikely event of a nippy dog. When he began ministering nearly 30 years ago, he said it would have been rare to see a congregation doing this. Over the years, it has become increasingly popular in Lutheran churches. He said, quote, In a time when there's so much bad news, we stop and remember that in the Jewish Christian tradition, we hold the fact that the world is good and God created the world good. Animals do bring a real sense of joy. People are searching, especially in difficult times, for access points to that joy. Though the celebration is done to commemorate the Feast of St. Francis each October, it's as much celebration of pets as it is a call to ecology. An Italian friar in the 12th century, St. Francis stopped to preach to the birds who sat and listened to him, instead of flying away, as the story is told. He then regretted that he didn't stop to preach to the animals more often, Froner said. Quote, "I wasn't there, but I have no trouble in being reminded how special animals are," Froner said Sunday. To those gathered, the blessing took on different meanings with their pets, many of whom were being blessed at the ceremony for the first time. Quote, "I've often wondered if pets had a place in heaven," said Darlene Hatch of Marion, whose Shih Tzu Daisy came in her stroller with a lace doily repurposed as a prayer cloth on her head. The dog has played a significant part in Hatch's life over the past 6 years, and the blessing makes her feel better about Daisy's place in life, on earth and in heaven. For Hiawatha resident Linda Fottrell, new to the congregation, the blessing of her 17-year-old cat, BJ, is a confirmation that he's part of the family. Quote, "They say all dogs go to heaven, but they don't say anything about cats," she said, laughing. For Barb Hazelton's Labradoodle, Maggie, the blessing provided reassurance that God is watching over the dog before she's boarded at a kennel during their vacation. The Cedar Rapids resident, a member of the Lutheran congregation for more than 40 years, remembers only one or two animal blessings over her years in the church. And for others, it's a reminder of the creation that connects everything beyond the confines of their homes. Zora, the 12-year-old tuxedo cat, had a chance to get out of the house for something other than a vet visit. Owner Mary Hajik said the blessing is extra special this year after losing a cat last year. Quote, It's just to remind people of the creation of God and to treat them respectfully, Hajik said. They're not there to be used and abused by us. In light of the pandemic, the blessing of pets near and dear to hearts has taken on a new meaning. Quote, "Especially with older people, it's almost like a child of theirs," said Deacon Paul Zimmerman of St. Pius X Catholic Church, who has helped bless animals in Cedar Rapids for several years. Quote, "Especially after losing a spouse, that pet becomes another person in the family. They just bring a peace into the family. And in isolation, animals are sometimes the only source of love and comfort to some humans," Froner said that love deserves to be celebrated. For those involved in blessing animals for years, even the less common pets brought to blessings, snakes, lizards, birds, ponies, chickens, goats, and even stuffed animals toted in by children, serve as a reminder of God's gifts to the earth. With that, many are reminded of how physically and spiritually interconnected everything on earth is. Quote, "Every creature that's alive tells us a little bit about God," said Sister Nancy Hoffman, one of the founders of Prairie Woods Franciscan Spirituality Center in Hiawatha. "The scripture is one of the primary sources of revelation, but the earth is also one of the primary sources of revelation." Often, she said, the latter tends to be overlooked by Christians, leading some to respect the earth less than they should. Part of the mission of Prairie Woods which is sponsored by the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, is to teach others how to live a life of environmental sustainability and preserve God's gifts on earth. Hoffman said, quote, "As each species of animal starts to become extinct, we know that takes a little bit of our knowledge away." I'll read that again. As each species of animal starts to become extinct, we know that takes a little bit of our knowledge away about who God is, Hoffman said. Each creature teaches us some individual characteristics of God. 25 years ago, Prairie Woods established a tradition of blessing the animals even before it caught on at some churches. In addition to giving folks a chance to share the pets they love with others, it gives educators the chance to raise awareness about endangered and abused animals. Quote, "By doing the blessing of the animals, it's more than just our trying to bless them. It's about acknowledging the blessing that they are to us," she said. "The Feast of St. Francis is more than just a blessing of the animals. They just epitomize it for us." Like the earth, Hoffman said, animals often give without expecting anything in return. In doing so, she said, they express qualities of godlike love, generosity, and patience. When people learn about how connected animals are to the other parts of nature, she said, it improves their spiritual lives and holistic health. Broner and Hoffman both said that the blessing provides a new access point to spiritually reach those who may not typically go to church. Hoffman said, quote, "We feel that there are many paths to God. Our mission is to provide the space to find that connection. We tend to think about revelation as something that happened a long time ago when the Bible was written. But revelation is being revealed every single day."